Years ago, there was a man in our church who had an old car that he was wanting to get rid of, and he asked me if I'd like a little project car to work on. It was a Mitsubishi. And so he couldn't get it to run. He had used it and run it into the ground. So he gave it to me. And I took it into my garage. The boys were still little, and I found out that it just wasn't getting gas. There was something wrong with the carburetor. So I went down to the AutoZone and talked to the guys there, and I said, I need a carburetor kit. And they said, that's fine. What model, what make, and so forth. And I said, Mitsubishi. They said, you don't want to do that. I said, why not? They said, it's extremely complicated. You don't want to get into a Mitsubishi. I said, well, you know, it's just a car that I got for nothing. I'll just work on it. I'll do my best on it. And I bought the carburetor kit. Took it home, went into the basement, had the table, and I took that carburetor off, had the kit sitting there, and I took that carburetor completely apart. There was nothing left that couldn't be taken apart. And so this table probably, it looked like 1,000 pieces. But as I took each piece off, I drew a map as to where this would go back. And by the way, that map is still in my garage hanging up on the wall. So I took that apart and I had it spread out. I took the kit, replaced all the bad parts, and I had nothing left over. It was a nice looking carburetor. I put the carburetor back on the car. Wouldn't start. I would spray gasoline into it, have one of my boys, probably Benjamin, try to crank the motor, and it would run as long as I was standing there putting the gas in like this. So I was frustrated, and I came in the house, and my wife said, have you put gas in the car? I said, oh, come on. You know, that's not what the problem is. The fuel gauge said it had a quarter tank in it. So I ended up selling it to a guy for $250. He knew it was something wrong with it, but I said it's got a brand new carburetor on it. A couple of weeks later, I don't know why I was ending up talking to this guy, but I said, hey, how's that car doing? He says, man, it runs like a charm. I said, what'd you do? He said, I put gas in it. But everything I attempted to do was vain. It was empty. All that work, all the time, all the effort, that map I drew that is still hanging up on the wall in my garage, was all vain. It was empty. It was to no use. It was useless. And I know that all of us, even in the ministry, have ideas of that was completely a waste of time. And it's time to quit. How many times we work hard on a project only to realize that all work was in vain? How many times we work so hard in the ministry and it seems like everything was in vain? And sometimes it is because we're doing it for the wrong reasons, we have the wrong motives, and we're not doing as we're going to see here tonight in Psalm 127. I don't like spending time on something that is not productive. I don't like spending time on something that is not profitable. When we built this building, it was all for nothing if we could not get a certificate of occupancy. We had to meet code if we were going to be able to occupy this building. And all of our lives are full of building. In our homes, we are building a family. We are building a home. We are building in our marriages. We are building in our businesses, in our financial security, in our careers, in our churches, in our personal lives. But the question I think we need to ask ourselves is, are we meeting code as we build? And so I had to ask myself, are there any principles of building in the Bible? And here's where we go. We go to Psalm 127, and we look at verse 1, and this is a verse that you're very familiar with. Except the Lord build the house, They labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. There is so much labor that we do that is in vain. Every day we're doing things that are in vain. The title of this psalm is literally the songs of the goings up. It was intended to be sung by the caravans of pilgrims going up to keep the yearly feast at Jerusalem. Solomon's name is affixed to this psalm, who obviously was the builder of the temple. Building the temple would be useless without the Lord. Folks, building a home without the Lord is useless. Building a business without the Lord is useless. Building a church without the Lord is useless. And the Bible teaches that our labor is vain if we do not have, and these are the three things I see in this verse, if we don't have, number one, the Lord's provision, because it says, except the Lord build the house. We ask, how can the Lord build the house? How can the Lord build a church? How can the Lord build a family? How can the Lord build a business? If everything I do is to have God with me and building, how does he do that? Well, I kind of liken it to what was happening with Cyrus in Ezra chapter 1 in rebuilding the temple. He said this in Ezra 1:2, the Lord God of heaven hath charged me to build him an house in Jerusalem. And yet we know that Cyrus probably never even came to Jerusalem. So how was it that Cyrus built Jerusalem or built the temple, rebuilt Jerusalem, the house that was there? He never went there personally. But he did direct the building. You might say that you built your own business. Barack Obama would say you didn't. But in a sense, there is some truth into what was being said. I did this. And, you know, when it comes to a church, it's not just the pastor who can say, I did this. It's people in the pew, too, can say, you know, we did this. Well, who all is included in that we? Who directed? Who provided? You see, we're looking at this fact that the Bible teaches that our labor is vain if we do not have the Lord's provision, except the Lord build the house. You know, Israel inherited a land with cities which, as God said it in Deuteronomy 6:10, which thou buildest not. Joshua 24:13, I have given you a land for which ye did not labor, and cities which ye built not. What was left for the Israelites to do when they came into the land? Nothing. Well, if you see the next verse after Deuteronomy 6:10, it says in verses 12 to 13, then beware lest thou forget the Lord. Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God and serve him. And we know that God has provided our salvation. Why should we work for something that has already been provided? Because we know it's not by works of righteousness. We know it's not of works lest any man should boast. Our labor is vain when it's done for salvation, because you, as well as I know, we cannot work for our salvation. We cannot provide for our salvation. All of our righteousnesses are as filthy rags, but we are to work out our own salvation, according to Philippians 2:12. People say, how do you work out your own salvation? I was talking to a guy the other day who caught me at a restaurant, and he saw that I was carrying the book I'm reading. I'm reading The Life of Jonathan Edwards. He said, is that a Bible? I said, no, it's about a man's ministry. He was a preacher. So he started trying to witness to me. And he was telling me how he was working out his salvation. He was working for it. I said, you're working for yourself? Yes, I need to keep working. I'm working hard for my salvation. I said, understand that verse, sir. It doesn't mean that you are to work for your salvation. You are to work out the salvation you already possess. And I gave him this illustration. I said, so when you go to the gym, do you go there to work for muscles? Or do you go there to work out the muscles you already have? I said, you go to work out the muscles you already possess. You're working out your muscles. The salvation that we already possess, Philippians 2:12, we are to work out with fear and trembling. It's the same thing with everything that God has provided for us. We are to use His gifts for His glory. But when we have the attitude that I built this or we built this, then we will use it for our own glory rather than for His. It's a paradox, a seemingly contradictory statement that unless the Lord build the house, they labor in vain to build it. Well, if He's building it, then why are we laboring to build it? If the Lord is the one who is building, why labor at all? I like the answer is given in 1 Corinthians 3 by the Apostle Paul. So then, neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. Here it is. For we are laborers together with God. And so that brings us to the second point in this verse. The Bible teaches us that a laborer is in vain if we don't have the Lord's provision, number one. But secondly, if we don't have the Lord's power. They labor in vain that build it. I find it interesting that the first mention of building in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, is what God built for Adam. You ready to hear this? Genesis 2:22, and the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, made he a woman. That word made is built. It literally is the word that is translated here in Psalm 127:1, built. God built he a woman and brought her unto the man. So we see that the first mention of that word has to do with a human. But then we also see that the first mentioning of building a structure is what man built for himself. You get to Genesis chapter 11 and you've got the Tower of Babel. The purpose for the building was wrong. It was built without God. Except the Lord build. And the Tower of Babel workers learned this. They toiled in vain because God's face was against them. This verse here in Psalm 127 does not say, because the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain. You see, sometimes we have the attitude that if it's supposed to happen, it will happen. If a church is going to grow, then it's just going to happen. If people are going to get saved, well, somehow it's just going to happen. If I'm going to grow in my personal life and my relationship with the Lord, well, it's just going to happen. All I need to do is sit back and watch it happen. That's the wrong attitude that we have. Spurgeon quoted a man by the name of Wolfgang Musculus, who lived in the 1400s. Who said this, the Holy Spirit is not the patron of lazy and inert men, but He directs the minds of those who labor to the providence and power of God. In other words, you are glad for the Lord to use someone else to make things happen, and you consider yourself relieved of the responsibility. That's true only after you've done everything it was your duty to do. So it doesn't say because the Lord builds the house. Neither does it say unless the Lord help build. But unless the Lord build. If you want to find out about building in vain, just visit the book of Ecclesiastes sometime. You know as well as I how many times the word vanity occurs in that book. But let's just go there for a minute. Ecclesiastes. And chapter 2. Because we need to be reminded of what I believe Solomon needed to be reminded of. When you look up the word labor, you'll find out that that word is used most often in this book. Because what was Solomon so involved in? Labor, labor, labor. And you talk about somebody who found out that his labor was in vain. The wisest man. And you'll note this in chapter 2, and beginning in verse 4, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards, and so forth and so on. You go down to verse 11, and he says, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Why was it that everything he did was vain, or literally to no avail? Three things that I found as I studied the book of Ecclesiastes. It was absent of pleasure. He was unable to enjoy it. He could not enjoy what he had built. Look at chapter 3 and verse 13. And also that every man should eat and drink, and enjoy the good of all his labor, it is the gift of God. The ability to enjoy what I have built is a gift of God. I like what Jim Berg says about this. He says, riches are a gift from God, but so is the power to enjoy them and the ability to rejoice in them. It's absent of pleasure. Secondly, all that we do, our labor that is vain, is abused. Go back to chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes. Note what it says in verses 18 and 19. We know these verses, but we need to be reminded of them. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. I've often wondered if the founders of our country could come and visit us today, what would they think? But we don't have to look back 240 years. We can look back just 10 to 15 years at what is happening in our churches. And now, those who have succeeded a pastor come in and change everything, and the church goes off in a totally different direction. And just have some of the founders, some of those charter members of some of these churches come back and see what's happening in churches and how they are going so far off and the things that they're doing. Wonder what would happen if those who founded Yale and Princeton and Harvard could see those colleges today, what they would think and what they would say. Who knows whether the guy who follows me is going to be a fool. And then what we do is sometimes vain to no avail because it's abandoned. You know what? We leave it behind. Chapter 5 and verse 15 of Ecclesiastes, as he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. So it is not in vain if you can take it with you. And although we can't take it with us, we can send it on ahead. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. The conclusion of Solomon's frustration, as you know, is in chapter 12 and verse 13. Fear God and keep his commandments. Every labor is vain without the blessing of God. So the Bible teaches that our labor is vain. It is vain. Our theme is our labor is not vain, but our labor is vain. It is empty if we don't have the Lord's provision, if we don't have the Lord's power, and lastly, if we don't have the Lord's protection. Last part of verse 1 there, Psalm 127, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. A house is built for protection. But who protects the house? We must still rely upon the Lord to keep the city, the group of houses that have been built. You know, the best guards may as well be armed with spitballs and paper swords without God, for their efforts are in vain without him, or even against him. Thought of two Old Testament books when I was thinking about this protection and how the Lord protects. He protects us. When I think of the book of Ezra, he protects us from deceivers. You see, folks, we cannot let the enemies of the gospel build with us. But they come in as deceivers and they say, hey, we're with you. Hey, we're on the same page. We can build with you. And all of us have had people like that in our churches. In fact, it's said this way, let us build with you, for we seek your God as ye do. But I like the answer that was given them. Ye have nothing to do with us to build an house unto our God. You have nothing to do with us. You see, if they cannot stop us from building from the outside, they'll try to join us and cause problems from the inside. Protection from deceivers. Secondly, protection from adversaries, as we see in the book of Nehemiah. The well-known verse, let us rise up and build. And in spite of the opposition the people faced in the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah says in chapter 4 and verse 6, the people had a mind to work. And then you get to chapter 4 and verse 9, and it illustrates what we see here in Psalm 127:1, because 4:9 says, nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. In other words, they relied upon God but watched. The point here is this, reliance upon God generates activity. It does not foster idleness, and it does not remove responsibility, and activity generates friction. And then when that protection is gone, we turn in panic to God, as all of our political leaders did on 9/11. And it should start with God. It was 1787, and the Constitutional Convention was an impasse. It was that impasse. It was just constant arguing, constant debating. And the delegates were discouraged by all the speeches. And Governor Morris wrote, the fate of America was suspended by a hair. Then, as it's recorded, 82-year-old Benjamin Franklin spoke. It's kind of a long quote, but I think it'll be interesting to illustrate what we're looking at here. Benjamin Franklin said, in the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for the divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of superintending providence in our favor. And have we now forgotten that powerful friend? Or do we imagine that we no longer need his assistance? I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall proceed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. We shall be divided by our little partial local interests. I therefore beg leave to move that henceforth prayers, imploring the assistance of heaven and its blessings on our deliberations, be held in this assembly every morning before we proceed in business. Now, if he, an unsaved, ungodly man, would say something like this and understand the importance of this, why don't we as his children? What is the evidence when we see something that it was the Lord who built it? The evidence is that it's used for his glory. And our personal preferences become secondary. In other words, the church doesn't become a party house or a social club. It's where God's word is faithfully preached. It means the home is a place for hospitality. It means that the business is a place to support the Lord's work. When we first moved out here to plant this church, we came here, arrived with half of our support. Now, missionaries don't typically go to the field with half of your support, but that's what we did. There was a friend of mine who I knew very well. We were students together in college. And I'd heard him say this often, if God ever blesses me, I am going to help ministries with the money I make. And at the time, you know when you hear this, when you're freshman, sophomore, junior, it's like, right. But for some reason, it was tucked in the back of my mind. And before we moved out here, I got a letter one day. And in that letter was a check for $5,000. He said, I feel burdened to help you. See that church gets planted out there. Well, that half support with that was a tremendous help. Then, when we're here, our son had to have surgery when he was just 9 months old. Phone call from this guy. How are you going to pay for this? Well, insurance will do so much. How much are you going to need at the end? Probably about so much. A few days later, check in the mail. Take care of it. You know, a man who allowed God to use his business for his glory did so because he allowed the Lord to help build, not just help build, but build the business. Folks, the same thing goes for our marriages. If the marriage is going to be built right, except the Lord build it, we labor in vain that build it. The psalmist here does not forbid the builder from laboring, does not forbid the watchman from watching, but that in so doing they cooperate with God and his purposes. I think it was Spurgeon who said that the Bible endorses the order of Cromwell. I like this. Trust in God and keep your powder dry. And Spurgeon said, here we are told that dry powder will not win the victory unless we trust in God. Jesus had told his disciples, I will build my church. But then in the next verse he says, and I will give unto you the keys of the kingdom. The question tonight is this, does what we are building meet code? Our families, marriages, church, business, career. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Literally, that your labor is not vain in the Lord. May the Lord deliver us from the foolish thinking that we can build everything by ourselves. We must have his provision. We must have his power. We must have his protection. Except the Lord build the house. Folks, we're doing it all in vain.